Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fan Experience Podcast. The Fan Experience Podcast is a podcast for sports fans to come out and tell us all about their fan experience. What became, you know, what made them a sports fan? What put them on the road to be, you know, living that sports fan lifestyle? You know, it's always those iconic fan experiences that you experience, whether it's live at the game, maybe as a player, or just, you know, just at home watching the game, that just makes you fall in love with it. So this is the platform, you know, for you guys to tell it. You know, everyone has that interesting story, and everyone wants to hear it. So I am your host, Mike Kados. Alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina. Rick, how we doing?
Doing well, Mike. A lot going on tonight. You know, we got big story in the NFL, big story in the NBA, and just a lot of sports all around, man. Even the Mets making some news.
Is that a big joke or?
Yeah, it's the weight of the world is on the shoulders of a certain someone. But there's a lot going on tonight. Well, I guess we'll start. As you can see, I'm wearing my Jets gear with the team that did hire a coach, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars, who hired Urban Meyer this afternoon to coach the team. We don't have specifics yet on the deal, but. You can rest assured that that's the perfect spot for a guy like Urban Meyer. He's a Florida guy, coached the Gators, he's going there. It's kind of mild-mannered place for him. And, yes, he will draft Trevor Lawrence for all of those who think that he has an Ohio State linking and Justin Fields. Know. He's drafting Trevor Lawrence.
That remains to be seen. You're not in that draft room.
No, I'm not there. But he's drafting Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, just a question for Jacksonville people, you know, they got to answer, is Urban Meyer going to be a guy who's going to be – committed long term? You know, this is the NFL. These hours are long. You know, he's had an issue, you know, history of health problems. He can be flaky, you know, once he's there a few years, then he wants to leave. So, you know, the question is he going to be a long term solution over there for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years? We'll wait and see. But, you know, for them, it's a good hire. It's a local guy. You know, he's known in the area. It's, you know, so the fan base and like kind of like the reporters and all that, they're kind of on his side over there. So, you know, it's a wait and see. I'm not sold on him over in the NFL yet, but, you know.
I agree with you. I do think that, you know, those Ohio State ties could possibly, but highly unlikely that they go Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence. But, you know, system-wise, you know, Justin Fields and Urban Meyer can be in sync that way. And, you know, Ohio State quarterbacks have not been very good in the NFL, and maybe it's because of adjusting to the system. And maybe, you know, if he does go there, I mean, if they were number two, I mean, that would have been a perfect pick for them. But
right,
unfortunately, that team that you're wearing on your head over there,
yeah,
my beloved Jets, they couldn't even do that right. Well, so, look,
the Jets are doing their due diligence right now. They had Robert Saleh in, second interview, meets everybody, then leaves. They just had, what's this guy's name? Arthur Smith, I think his name is. Second interview, I think, is me, and he leaves. So I think the Jets, a lot of people are saying, well, people are walking out of the building. They don't want to call. I think the Jets are doing their due diligence because they want to do this right. They don't want to do it like they did with Adam Gase, where, you know, he gets a call from Peyton Manning, comes in, weird press conference. No, the Jets want to do this right. They want to do this right because they want to move in a different direction, and they want to make sure that whoever Joe Douglas brings in is the guy who works hand-in-hand with him to get this thing turned around. So I wouldn't worry if you're a Jet fan out there that, you know, we don't have a coach yet. The Jets want to make sure they hire the right guy for this organization.
Yeah, well, you know, let's see how they come out of it. You know, obviously there's no rush. You know, and I don't think any coach is really in a rush right now to sign with the Jets. I wouldn't say that they're the prime candidate for any of these head coaching positions. You know, a month ago, yes. But, you know, if I had my pick of the litter, I'd want to go to the Chargers, to be completely honest with you. Yeah. But
or Houston, you know, with Deshaun Watson.
If Deshaun Watson stays. But, you know, let's talk about Houston for a second.
Let's get into that a little bit.
So the Houston Rockets have traded a 4-team deal.
I believe it was. You had the Cavs and the Pacers involved in that.
James Harden was traded to the Brooklyn Nets. Yeah. So now he is teaming up with Kevin Durant and the player who has yet to be seen in the last few days, Kyrie Irving. So the New York media is killing Kyrie Irving, and they're killing this trade. You know, they leverage their future to win now, and not a lot of people like it. You know, I'm indifferent either way, but yeah, it's a big three. Granted that Kyrie Irving ever shows back up, so you know we'll see how that all plays out. Yeah. Rick, what are your thoughts on it?
I like it. I'll tell you why. Look, you have Kevin Durant right now in his prime. He's just coming off the Achilles. The guy is behind LeBron. He's the second best player in the league, right? I mean, I was watching him last night against the Knicks. I mean, he could score at will, you know, mid-range from three if he needs to post up. I mean, the guy's just an unstoppable basketball player. He's incredible, an incredible player, right? And obviously, Kyrie has his issues on and off the court. I think once James comes, he's going to come back. And I think Harden's going to be motivated to win, to prove people wrong. And to win, and it doesn't all fall on his shoulders now. He has Durant there, he has Kyrie there. They're gonna want to win to get DeAndre Jordan's there, Jeff Green's there, Steve Nash is there, Mike D'Antoni's back over there. So I think this move that the Nets made, and people say it was panic. No, the Nets are going for it. They're going for it. I mean, this is the time. You get an opportunity to get a guy like James Harden, you get him and you go for it. And listen, if he wants to, he'll drop 40 points a game. It's not like Harden doesn't show up for these games. Yeah, he's had his issues in the playoffs. But I like the move, man. You know, you go bold, you know, and the Nets are going bold. And right now I think they're the second-best team in the NBA behind the Lakers. And, you know, if they get to the finals, that's going to be an incredible NBA finals. You know, I mean, that looks like a team that if you get them in a seven-game series with the Lakers could stop them. You know, can DeAndre Jordan match up with Anthony Davis? We'll see. But, I mean, you got three of the top 10 players in the league on one team. You know, you get into a seven-game series, anything can happen. So I like the move for the Brooklyn Nets. I really, really do. I think it's a bold move. You know, congratulations to them. Great job.
Yeah, we got a comment here. Thanks for joining us, Khaled. Shows the state of the Knicks that superstars like Durant, Irving, and Harden want to go to the Nets. Dolan has killed us. Yeah, well, okay. I mean.
Listen, Khaled, Dolan has killed us, and you're right. Dolan has. But listen, I think James Dolan gets a lot of blame for a lot of stuff. Yeah, but the guy has spent the money. He's trying to bring the right people in here. I think, you know, he's been loyal to the wrong people. I think he's just brought the wrong people in, the Phil Jackson. Listen, he hired Phil Jackson. Everybody loved it. Then it was a disaster. Donnie Walsh brought Carmelo. So he's tried to do some things. He just hadn't got the right people. I think with Leon Rose and Worldwide West, Thibodeau's there. They got a young team. You're building this nucleus. I think the Knicks are going in the right direction. I've said it myself on this show. I think they're going to win 35, 36 games. They're going to be a 500 team. But in the end, the Knicks are building. They're with Obi here. They're going to get some more players. They got some more picks. You know, so I think the sky's the limit. I think the Knicks are turning things around over there.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, they are on an upward swing. I agree with you. And, you know, I mean, hopefully it's – hopefully it's another mini golden era for the Knicks. So,
but this, you know, but the move, but forward to. For the people who are killing the Nets, no man, you get an opportunity to get a guy like that on your team, you get him, man, you get him.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, I mean, let's just hope it's not too many egos going up against.
Oh, it's gonna be great. You know, don't get me wrong. It's gonna be like a reality show over there.
That's the biggest thing. But, yeah, but you know, well, yeah, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. So right now we will be bringing on our next guest, joining us right now. He's an award-winning producer. Please welcome Steveland Wilson.
What's happening, guys?
Hey, how you Steveland, doing, Steveland? How are you?
I'm good. You can hear me okay?
Yep. Loud and clear. Gotcha.
My headphones, my earpiece here died just as we were about to come on.
Yeah, you know what? That always happens to me too.
It happens.
I have to go with the wired. Or
yes, that's what it is. Things start to fail.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, it's a valid theory. I'm not gonna lie. So thank you again for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on. So you know, we always start off, you know, the interview really with how'd you get involved with loving sports? Like back when you were a kid, like who did you root for? You know, what were some of those fan experiences that really hooked you into sports?
Oh man, you want to go way back. So, I mean, look, I always competed at something, whether it's just strictly if it was running outside, if it was picking up a bat and a ball, if it was riding a bike. You know, I grew up in New York City. I was born in Georgetown, Guyana. Grew up in New York City in the 80s, 80s and 90s, you know, playground basketball. So it was really just a matter of just getting out. You know, I lived in a house with my uncles. They were all sports fans, mm-hmm. A variety of different sports as well, whether it be basketball. One of my uncles, he was an auto racing fan. So I was around it all the time. But really, I didn't have the patience to sit and just watch. I wanted to get out and play. So it started with just playing sports and every sport you can play. Now, in terms of my fandom, if you want to jump forward to that, interestingly enough, so I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Anyone that knows me know that I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So I'm really not embracing this weekend of the you know, but I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And that fandom really started when I hated the Buffalo Bills. Again, this is not a good weekend for me.
Yeah, not a good weekend for you.
No. Not at all. I was not a fan of the Buffalo Bills. And it was, I never forget, it was Bill Cowher's first year in Pittsburgh. I didn't even know who the Steelers were just about that time. I was probably about age 12 or 13 or something, like maybe about 12. And I never forget, the Pittsburgh Steelers played the Buffalo Bills on a Monday night. And the Steelers were just, they were just incredible. That's the first time I saw the zone blitz concept, where they would bring the corner, rotate the safety over the top. They were blowing up receivers, blitzing the heck out of the quarterback, knocking people out the game. I remember that game. They probably took about five players out the game. And I said, wow, this is the team. First of all, I don't like the Bills. And yeah. Second of all, this team is physical. They're tough. They run the ball. So then for me, I just went back and did a ton of homework on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I learned about their teams of the 70s and that dynasty and, you know, whether it be Mean Joe Green, Jack Lambert, you know, that whole that steel curtain defense. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, my fandom of the Pittsburgh Steelers and football as a whole grew. But at that point, I started to play Pop Warner football, and I also was competing in the neighborhood.
That's awesome. So, you know, I want to hear your take. Like, what was your take on Sunday?
Oh,
you know,
my God.
What's going through your head, you know, the second that, you know, the center snaps it over Roethlisberger's head? I mean, the guy is 6 feet six, like, and he's, you know, how do you miss a guy like that?
Well, there's two reasons. First of all, it was miserable. Yeah. Let me set the mood for you guys, though, right? So, again, huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I don't even take too many phone calls during Steelers games. I only go back and forth with my college teammates, mm-hmm. and other people who are really diehard football fans or understand the sport. I was running behind because I had some business obligations, so I recorded the game. Mm-hmm. I put my phone down. I set the mood. I dimmed the lights. I lit a candle, some aromatherapy. I ate, got it all out the way, and said, okay, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch this game, and I'm going to catch up eventually about halftime. But I'm going to watch it in peace because I'm sort of behind. And the first play of the game, Pouncey snaps the ball over Ben's head and it goes into the end zone. It was the touchdown. I'm like, okay, all right, bad start. Seen this movie before. Let's see what happens on the second drive. Second drive, Ben throws a pick. At that point in time, I knew this was going to be bad. I didn't know exactly how bad. I forwarded to the point where it got to be about 28-0, and I realized in order for me to have a peaceful night of some sort, I needed to tap out of this game. I had to turn the TV off, and lo and behold, I had lots of text messages and phone calls. I may have had a few welfare checks to make sure I was doing okay, but it was not good, and it was hard. And you know, working in and around sports, and I also work in news. It's not easy when your team loses and you have to face the wrath on a Monday or Tuesday. So at this point, I'm sort of kind of over it, but it wasn't fun at all.
Well, Steveland, yeah. as you can see, a Jet fan, I've suffered that for quite a while. But is there any way that the Steelers could trade Mike Tomlin to us? Because we need a coach, and he's probably the second best coach in the league. Is there any way that could happen? Is there?
No, you guys are going to be in purgatory for a long time. But I mean, it starts at the very top with ownership.
Yeah.
However, I'll say this about the Jets. Because my best friend's a huge Jets fan. And of course, me being a New Yorker, I naturally root for New York teams. You know, yes, I'm a Steeler fan, but I root for New York teams. I think the Jets make. I think Sam Bradford's a better quarterback than people realize. I think they just need to kind of get the best coach and tutelage around him.
Yeah.
If you look at his natural arm strength, his ability to move and move in the pocket, I do think there's hope there. It's just hard when you've had what three offensive coordinators or whatever. There are three offensive systems in 4 years or whatever long it's been. And then when you look at the Jets, when you look at how they turn players over, so they acquired Le'Veon, that didn't work out. If you look at some of their top defensive players that they've had, they've drafted, they're not on the team. Leonard Wilkinson's not on the team. Who's some of the other guys? Sheldon Richardson, not on the team.
Not a team.
These are all players that are making plays for other teams. Jamal Adams.
Robbie Anderson.
So when you look at a situation where you draft the player, you develop a player, but you can't keep a player. So in which case you're never going to be successful. I say this is what the Jets should do. The Jets should really make a moment. They really need to kind of capitalize on the draft. Just turn that into the Super Bowl for the Jets, because really and truly, every year you're competing for a top five draft pick. Just based on how things are done. So, you know, make that the fan experience. Get fans excited for the draft, because that's really kind of where you're always at. You're always at in that sort of top five, top 10 lottery space in the draft. But Tomlin to the Jets, that's not going to happen. Let's not even start that rumor.
I wish.
No, it's not a rumor. It's wishful thinking.
It's been my dream for like 3 years now. So
Exactly.
So as a fellow Hofstra alum, because I went to Hofstra, I wanted to ask you about your career. When did you first know? When did you sort of see yourself going down the path of sports journalism, of news reporting? Like, when did that begin for you?
Great question. So for me, you know, I played sports in high school. I first went to junior college. And when I played in high school, I really didn't know what it is I wanted to do in terms of academics, let's say. I knew, you know, grades were important and staying academically eligible to be a competitor was important. But I didn't realize when I got to junior college, actually, one of my teammates had a sports show on campus, and he would call basketball games and what have you. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. How'd you get into that? He said, well, I'm a communications major. And as a communications major, it allowed me to sort of kind of get a radio show, a TV show. And so when I transferred to Hofstra, I immediately joined. I was a communications major as well as a speech minor. And that gave me an opportunity to sort of understand media and broadcast as I was competing as an athlete. At an early age, or at least at an early time in my life, at least, I got an opportunity to see how broadcast, media, journalism, and sports go hand in hand. And I say this with the athletes. I've gotten an opportunity to work with a lot of athletes over the past decade or so. And I talk about that hand-in-hand relationship, the importance of the media and broadcast journalism as it pertains to sports and the business of sports. So I was able to identify that. Obviously my goal and everyone's goal is to go professional, but that wasn't in the cards for me. But I did realize that I had an opportunity to work in this industry. And my first job in this industry wasn't even in sports. It was actually in news radio. But I knew I wanted to work in sports. Yeah. So I was doing a radio show called Radio Africa International, which was a global news program where I was an engineer. But I knew I wanted to work in sports, and I got an opportunity at CBS Sports to start at an entry-level position and then move on up. But it was really at Hofstra as a football player. We had a really good team at the time I was there. We had really good players. But I started to kind of take in what was happening around me in terms of academics, work in broadcast journalism and communications. Look, I'm still part of the university to this day. I'm very involved with the university, very involved with the School of Communications. Dean Lukashevitz, who's the dean of the Herbert School of Communications, I chair his board. Okay. And we talk about ways in which we can continue to enhance that communication and journalism program. And one of the endeavors is to make sports and the business of sports a core curriculum within the university. So I'm proud to actually be part of that endeavor, but it really started for me back while I was an athlete and competing, and I realized that the two went hand in hand.
That's awesome. It's admirable, and you know, obviously, it's great to have you advocating for that, because you know, I mean, we've had a lot of people on this show, you know, that have been interested in, you know, in getting into sports, and you know, obviously, to have more programs out there easily and readily available is, you know, is it's great. You know, it's great for everyone. So yeah, you said, you know, obviously I see here, you know, Radio Africa, and then you went on to, you know, work for like ABC and CBS for a little bit, but you were doing some graphics for the View, and you know, just earning your licks there. And then you had a decent stint over there at CBS Sports. Talk to us about that a little.
Yeah, well, CBS Sports was really my first opportunity in working in the industry in sports. I was working at Radio Africa International, covering news on a global stage, focused primarily in the African continent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started working, I was welcomed into CBS on just pretty much on a weekend basis as a logger. I started off as a logger, but I really took the job seriously because I realized how fortunate I was to get simply paid to come in on a weekend and be around every sports spectacular happening on television. It doesn't matter what the position was. So I took it very seriously. Worked for a great man by the name of Arthur Harris, who was the vice president of broadcast operations. So he ran the entire operation, and he really gave me an opportunity to start at an entry level. And I just really committed myself in every way possible to just working my way up. So I went from logging to working in graphics, formed some really excellent relationships there. People who are still my closest friends to this day, Peter Klein, who I know has been on your show, who's a partner of mine and sort of like a brother from another mother. We've been together. we've worked together during the NCAA tournaments, during college basketball, college football, golf, you name it. And eventually at CBS, I became an associate director. And so I was coming up that route. So I worked on The View as well in daytime television. So I was able to get some diversity in terms of my career and background. Moved over to ABC within the news division, still working within sports. So that's kind of the way I kind of, you know, bounced around. But it was really when I got to ESPN, where in terms of sports, where things were awesome. I was able to be part of ESPN, the magazine, at a time where digital was just starting to come into its own. So I was able to work with magazine folk and get that experience of being in that atmosphere in terms of writing and creative writing and storytelling and written form, but then also translating that written form to video form and being part of some amazing photo shoots and journeys. Listen, I've been able to, through my time at ESPN and ESPN the magazine and so forth, travel all around the globe and work with some of the best athletes in the world. So when I got to ESPN, that's when things opened up in terms of travel and working up close with athletes and working on in-depth stories. And for me, I grew as a producer. And it went from simply being a fan and an experience to being a profession and a livelihood. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate to work with the great Kobe Bryant and Usain Bolt. And I've been in the garage with Danica Patrick, Tom Brady, whomever else, Peyton Manning, just a bunch of athletes. Mm-hmm. And it was some of the best time in my life. And not only that, I worked with great people with great crews, and we got a chance to travel all over the world, from the Asian continent to the African continent to the European continent, telling fantastic sports stories on people that you may have heard of or people that you have not heard of who just have tremendous sports stories. And you know, it became a big part of my life.
Yeah, no, and you know, we saw on YouTube, you know, you got a couple of videos up there. You got some, you know, Aaron Rodgers interviews and Floyd Mayweather. Yeah. So, you know, that's really great. And you know, that's the thing we love about this. Like, you know, we just started this during the pandemic. We just wanted to talk sports and hear everyone's stories. You know, whether it's, you know, it doesn't have to be a high level athlete. You know, everyone has a story, and that's what we want this, you know, this platform to be, is just give everyone an opportunity. And yeah, you mentioned Pete, you know, we love Pete. You know, he was one of our, you know, early guests on this show in season one, and obviously he put us in contact with you, you know, so big thanks to Pete for that.
Can you tell a Pete story? Can I tell a story about Pete? And
yeah,
I
of course. Quick? Yeah, please.
So Pete Klein and I, again, my good friend, partner, we go way back to our early days at CBS Sports. I think now it's probably about 17 years ago or so now. Mm-hmm. And so we worked the NCAA tournament in this this room, this graphics room where, you know, I was a coordinator, he was the operator, and when you see the scores of games and other games going on, and
yes,
like we were fortunate to be part of the first edition of that, and when CBS rolled that out, and awesome. And we had some amazing stories. But one of my favorite stories with Pete, again, Pete played college football as well. I played college football. He was a tight end. I played linebacker. Yep. I played 1AA ball. He played Division 1A ball at Boston College, and we would be in this room for hours. I mean, like about 12 hours straight, and we would be pounding back Mountain Dews. And we would do push-ups, we'll do sit-ups, we'll jump rope. We made this we turned this and I don't even think the rest of the company knew that we were doing this. We were working, we got the job done, but we turned it into a complete fitness room where we work out. We would jog around, or he might jog around the building. I might jog one way. Even when we went to get our food, we ran back. And everything was about sports, working out. We would watch games as we're working and break down an entire offense or defense. And I swear, nothing against the people who are on air doing it professionally.
Yeah. But
we felt that we had some better conversations about what was happening on the field in our room because we both played. He played offense. I played defense. And we knew the game so well. And we would do it through football, through basketball. So we had a lot of really good fun, but it was really about banging back a ton of
Mountain Dews. Which
I can't imagine is really the healthiest thing to do. But,
with doing push-ups and sit-ups all simultaneously and jogging around? I don't know.
I mean, if you're jogging and if you're eating, you're banging back all kinds of cakes and whatever sandwiches, and you're knocking back Mountain Dews. But we had a lot of fun, and to this day, you know, we still have, you know, obviously with the pandemic, we can't get together the way we used to. But everything that Pete and I did was involved a lifestyle, an active life sport, a sport lifestyle where it's about the athletic lifestyle. And we did everything from discuss gear, like athletic gear, to the best workout gear, to the best exercises, martial arts, you name it. We did it. So that's a great friend of mine.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's like a band of brothers right there. In that.
Oh, interview. No, that is awesome.
You know, I wanted to ask you. I saw that interview or that clip in ESPN at Floyd Mayweather. That was done at his gym when he was training, right?
Yeah. So thanks for watching. So that was, you know, there was a period of time at ESPN where, you know, I dabbled on air stuff.
Okay.
As a reporter, which was largely through ESPN the magazine and the digital group, and fortunately, I was able to do some really cool things for television. And I was able to get some excellent one-on-one conversations with people. And I had the good fortune of working with Floyd Mayweather twice. And also another great, some really great experiences. So I'm not sure which clip you saw, but here's the interesting thing about Floyd. If you ever watch Floyd training, yes, you don't realize, first of all, you see all these people in the gym. First of all, it's really hot. He kept the gym at about 100 degrees. It was blistering hot. There were a ton of people there, everything from security to people who worked with him to lots of women. like it was everything. There were other celebrities there. I was there and I saw lots of things and lots of people that you're not privy to when the cameras are rolling. And he showed and everyone will be waiting. Everyone will be waiting. And he'll finally show up. And one thing, I heard this the other day, he was always so locked in focused. I'll say this about Floyd. Say whatever however you might feel about him as a person or what you see, he was one of the most focused and dedicated athletes I've ever been fortunate enough to witness. And like I said, I've been with in his training camp twice to be part of coverage. Yeah. And he was locked in, focused in his training and his technique. I remember one time he was sparring. This might have been before the Cotto fight. And he was sparring, and we had to turn our cameras off and turn our cameras the other direction to make sure we weren't filming it. And he sparred for about maybe 12 rounds, and he didn't sit once in the corner. He did not sit once in the corner. He was in tip-top shape. He talked trash to his sparring partner, and he beat him. And I was always impressed with him as an athlete with that laser focus, because I don't think not everyone. It's hard to realize how challenging it might be to remain focused with so much distraction happening around you. But that was the sort of athlete he was. And even in speaking with people who trained with him, they talked about, look, Floyd will call you at 3 a.m. to go play basketball, you know, or go run. Now, when I interviewed Floyd, specifically the first time, it had to be, for many, it could be considered one of the most intimidating interview scenarios, because we were in the ring talking across, this is the first time at least, we're in the ring and talk from across from each other talking. But what you can't see that is surrounding the entire ring and in the entire gym are loads and loads of people, his security, his team, the money team,
yeah,
random people I don't even know, women who were dead silent listening to everything you were saying. So it wasn't an empty room between Floyd and I. It was everyone you could imagine just pile on listening. And he was very serious about his interview. So if anyone made even just a peep of noise, they had to get out of the gym.
Wow.
Anyone made a single peep, they had to get out of the gym. But the thing that I realized with Floyd early on was he respected others who talked. If you can talk about sports and boxing and you really understood boxing, he respected the conversation. I think some of the mistakes that others may have made in the past respectfully was try to incite him to kind of get a reaction.
Like Brian Kenny or stuff like that, like Larry Merchant, like people like
instances like that.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, Brian Kenny and those and Larry Merchant are excellent boxing
fans. Yeah, absolutely.
They know more about boxing than I may have even that I know for sure. But I'm confident in my knowledge of the sport. And I think what aided my efforts with Floyd was the fact that I really wanted to talk to him about pure boxing and the sport and him as an athlete, specifically for the story that we were covering. And he valued that respectfully. And we were able to have a really engaging conversation about the sport of boxing. But it was really hot. And all the times I've worked, it's really hot and there's a lot of people that's just there. But that's the environment. And, you know, I was raised in Brooklyn, New York. So I don't really feel intimidated by the scenario or the situation that I'm in. So I was fortunate to have not just one, but two really good conversations with him. I was fortunate to, you know, even, you know, in times we worked together, we worked at his house. Go back to his house.
His house is beautiful, I heard.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, again, another crazy story where we spent the day we worked with him. I worked with him as a staff for about 2 days. And it was a Friday. And we were going to go back to wait for him at his house, myself and the photo team. And he went to after he finished training, he went to go eat to a restaurant. One of our writers went. And we thought he would be back at about maybe 8 o'clock or something like that. I had this whole plan in my head. I'm in Vegas. I can work, get some work done, go get a nice dinner someplace. That never happened. We were at his house until about 4 a.m. He did not come back until about 2 a.m. Kid you not. He didn't come back until about 2 a.m.
Wow.
Comes back with his whole team. 50 Cent was with him.
Oh, yeah, because they were buddies, yeah.
Yeah, so at that time, they were really cool. I got an opportunity to have really cool conversations with 50 Cent as well. I'm hanging out. I'm in his house waiting for him. There were a couple other girls that were just randomly in the house just waiting. there was always this people. I didn't eat. We didn't eat at his staff. I never forget this. I would go into his – he had a theater, a home theater in his house.
Yeah.
And I'm going to his theater, his home theater – and just eat M&Ms. I was just taking all his M&Ms just because we were all really hungry. And finally, he showed up at about 2 o'clock, still full of energy, 2 a.m., I should say. At that point, he needed a haircut. So he called up his barber, woke his barber up, and she came out. He had to get a haircut. And we worked with him until about 4 a.m., 4:30. But he was truly pleasant to work with, in my experience. I'm not saying for anyone else's experience.
Yeah.
My personal experiences with working with Floyd – he was laser focused. He was about his business. He wanted to do things his way, but he commands that respect. But I had a really good, pleasant experience, except for waiting for hours in someone's home for them to come back. I didn't enjoy that. Got a chance to see a bunch of his really cool cars. He had a really, really cool car that 50 Cent had given him for his birthday that was in a whole separate room. And then 50 came and he talked me through the car. He explained, like, hey, this car was totally made. Here was what I was thinking when I made this. I made that. I wanted this part. And I gave it to Floyd as a gift. And the car wasn't even legally allowed to be on the road.
Wow.
So yeah, so but I got a ton of really, really cool stories, so this is going on forever, but I realize we have a time.
That was an amazing story.
No, that's incredible, because it's true that Floyd has this, like they say, his vice is training. Like he just every day is in that gym, every day he's working out. Like it's just his work ethic is just like on a different level than everybody else. It's just incredible.
Yeah, what I saw was a truly, in my opinion, one of the greatest athletes of all time. Based on what it is he put out as an athlete. Again, you can certainly question personal choices. That's not for me to judge.
Yeah.
But from my experiences working with him as an athlete, I saw an athlete who was always laser in the two time. I was there when he was in the Kodo, when he was training for Kodo. And I can't remember what was the other fight that he was. It was sometime after Kodo. What's the champ? Canelo. I was there before.
Oh, Canelo Alvarez. Okay, yeah.
Before Canelo. And again, laser focused, came into the gym ready to work despite any distraction. And it was there were lots of people, lots of music, whatever. None of that fazed them. And I think when you compare Floyd, when you look at some of the other boxers who try to mimic that Floyd persona, what they lack is certainly that sort of that commitment to their craft that Floyd innately has, which allowed him to be such a fantastic athlete and a boxer when he stepped into the ring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you, so you've done – oh, go ahead, Mike. You were going to say something?
No.
So you, over your 17-year career, you say you haven't been intimidated, but is there one interview, maybe it could be your first interview, where you were a little bit like, okay, like I'm interviewing a professional athlete, like you know, you get like those butterflies?
Yeah. Real good question. I was 17 years in sports, but 20 year overall career, 2021. Okay. When I look at when you talk about intimidating, I think when I finally got to the chair, I really felt comfortable talking to athletes. I think in the buildup, when I worked with Danica Patrick. I'm not a NASCAR fan, it's not that I'm not a NASCAR auto racing NASCAR fan. I'm not as knowledgeable about NASCAR and auto racing. I really had to do my homework. Mm-hmm. And I think out of respect for the person I'm working with, I owe it to them to know as much as I possibly can about a sport. I think for me, stepping into a garage it might have been Talladega or wherever it might have been, and sitting across from an athlete like Danica Patrick, that's something that maybe that I kind of remember just because here I'm sitting, you know, that I'm 6'2". Danica is about, I don't know, 5'2", or whatever it is. but a feisty, confident athlete. So I think back to that experience in terms of auto racing and having to discuss auto racing with someone who's truly a professional. That's an example of a time where I might have, you know, maybe go heading into the situation. I sat down. You know, I had the opportunity to work with Kobe Bryant and interview Kobe Bryant. Kobe is also another person, the late Kobe, great Kobe Bryant. It was my one and only time working with Kobe. Mm-hmm. He's very respectful when he walks in, but he's also professional. And maybe there might be a little bit apprehension in terms of how I kind of engage. But again, once I got going, for me, the good fortune is the fact that I played sports and I share a similar background as many of the athletes that I've worked with. So we're always able to find a common ground, but someone like Kobe going into the conversation. But once we get going with the conversation, it felt natural. Yeah, I was able to work with Tom Brady, and you know, Tom Brady's truly the GOAT. But again, he walked in quite. He was respectful of everyone else's time. And then once we got a chance to sit down, the interesting quick story about Tom Brady. I worked with Tom on a project, and he was. Once I get going, I feel confident where I can tell you what to do. So we were doing something. I'm like, Tom, I didn't like that. And he would say, yeah, that sucked. Let's do it again. And so he gave me the confidence, or I felt empowered to really kind of direct him when we were doing stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, Tom, that sucked. He's like, yeah, you're right. That does suck. Let's do it. And we were able to, build that sort of rapport. Like, you know, that's not good enough. That's good. That's great. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's do it again. You know, so I think when faced with situations like that, I might be nervous at the beginning, at the outset, but once we kind of get going, the nerves kind of go away. And that was kind of is essentially the situation. I was able to work with Usain Bolt. I spent time with Usain Bolt in Paris. You know, you got to break the ice there, and then you kind of get comfortable with someone. But again, once you get going, one of the best athletes I've ever been around, ever, or anyone's ever been around, one of the best athletes of all time. But I think once what you realize, and you guys have certainly realized this as you kind of as you continue down the line.
Yeah.
Once you sit down and talk with people, and you show them the respect, but also you value them in terms of their craft, and you truly show a commitment to understanding their plight, what they're doing, or what their journey is. I think you gain their respect, and that was always my thing, to make sure I truly empathize with what their experiences are as athletes. Really take the time to understand their background, their path, their journey, and also being able to put myself, use myself as an example. Like, look, I'm a professional myself. I'm not running, catching, throwing, but I'm doing something professionally. I think we were able to find a common ground of mutual respect where we're able to work with each other.
That's great advice. And, you know, I know a lot of people that do tune into the show, though they love sports, they want to get into something, you know, something in the sports industry. You know, a lot of people that have their own podcasts that have been on here that watch and, you know, looking for that, you know, that great advice. You know, if you had that one piece of advice, you know, obviously show respect, but, you know, what's one thing you've learned over the years that you would probably give somebody in the audience as advice?
Yeah, I think in regards to in terms of the profession, I think really studying the craft, and that goes with anything that you're going to do. You know, I have right now much of my time now is spent I'm now even further committed in the news space and working on issues that impact our country today, working on social issues, social injustice, and what have you. And everything that I do, there's a commitment to understanding what it is that I'm doing, what my mission is. So I would say in terms of advice is, if you want to be in sports journalism, news, entertainment, whatever it is that you want to do, you really have to kind of commit yourself to the craft and understanding. You can't simply want to be on camera, behind a microphone, writing, producing, directing, just for the sake of saying that you do it or seeing your face or hearing your voice. I think you really have to commit yourself passionately to the art. And also, the other thing is, for me, I truly embrace or approach this profession as an art. I think it's an art, and I approach it as an art form. So I always approach every interview situation and talking to people and engaging with people as an art form. I passionately become that, and that's what I challenge other people to do. Whatever it is that you choose to do, you really have to become it, and you almost have to lose yourself in it. Mm-hmm. Like a dancer will lose themselves in dancing. Mm-hmm. I think when you step into this arena, you really have to lose yourself in it. So if you are passionate about sports, passionate about talking about sports, you really have to commit yourself to losing yourself and being in that space and really being in that moment and living that moment. Whether you're a director, and I've had a great opportunity to work with fabulous directors, some of the best producers, some of my former colleagues at ESPN were some of the best producers I've ever worked with, and amazing writers. You know, and really, it's really, really getting into it and becoming it. And you feel it, and that's what it is. And in my opinion, that's really what it is. But you have to do that with things that you're really passionate. You can't fake that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's when you become truly successful. And it's like, and you've heard this already, and it's a Bruce Lee saying. He talks about water, become water. He's like, you put water in a glass, it becomes the glass. You put water in a tub, it becomes the tub. Be water, my friend. That really resonates to me, because you really got to become it to really be great at it. And have a passion for it.
That was amazing advice. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That's amazing. So I want to talk a little bit about Yo, you just recently won an Emmy for your work with ESPN, correct?
Is that your first?
And you know,
I've been a part of Emmy award endeavors before. My time at The View, was fortunate to be part of that Emmy award winning staff. Here at ESPN, I was able to win other accolades as well for the story that we won an Emmy for. That was all. We also won an Edward R. Murrow Award for as well.
Wow.
That's certainly a first right there, and it's something I'm humbled to be part of with my entire team that we worked with to do these stories. But thank you very much for bringing that up. I mean, look, we traveled to Tanzania. Actually, we flew to Tanzania, then we flew to Kigoma, then we drove to a place called Kasulu. We went and we spent essentially nearly a week near the border of Burundi at a refugee camp called the Narugusu refugee camp,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the largest refugee camps in the world. And we told the story of a boy who has an intellectual disability where culturally they don't accept or understand intellectual disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So it was perceived that he was possessed. So the young boy was found chained in his hut intellectual disability was possibly possessed or some sort. And the Special Olympics, having done work in that refugee camp, was able to find boy, and they stumbled upon him and introduced him to sports, and then he was then able to one thing led to another, and he eventually was able to compete in the Special Olympics. But beyond sports, what that did for the rest for the refugee camp itself and culturally, because it changed the perception of intellectual disabilities, right? It destigmatized to a certain extent that intellectual disability and realizing it is an issue. Not only just that one boy had that condition, but there were others, and sort of may help them to look at how they were treating the situation. So it was a fantastic fantastic experience. And that's one of the many opportunities I was able to get in this career, certainly at ESPN, but as a whole, even in this industry,
mm-hmm.
where you get to find some of the best stories aren't even on a professional level, right? Because you can certainly tell incredible, fantastic stories about NBA players, NFL players, MLB players, so on. But there are incredible stories of sports and how sports impact life and impact people on the amateur level. So here it was, sports in a refugee camp near the border of Burundi, where people were escaping and fleeing Burundi or wherever they might because of war, and finding themselves in exile and in a refugee camp, where we were able to be part of telling a story, myself and a fantastic team at ESPN and Matt Knapp, who I got a shout out to, who's an incredible DP, director of photography, and the Special Olympics team and whatever. We were able to partner and tell this incredible story and venture into places that on the other side of the earth, at the beginning of civilization, okay, where we were driving on dirt roads every single day back and forth for an hour.
Wow.
Where in 100 degree weather, in a refugee camp where people have, I mean, we were filming, we went into tiny huts where people were literally sleeping on dirt floors, literally sleeping on dirt. It helps you to, it reminds you how fortunate we should be to live in a country that we live in now.
Yeah.
Where unfortunately there's so much other things playing out that reveals the warts of this country. But nonetheless, we are so much more fortunate to some of our neighbors around the world. And I was able to kind of see that. And fortunately, we were able to tell an incredible story. There were experiences that I had there that didn't even make the story that I would have loved. But thankfully, it was well respected and appreciated.
Oh, that is a fascinating story. And, you know, it's amazing. Rick, you can take.
No, Steve Lind, you know, I want to ask you, in your 20 years, when you look back doing those push-ups and those Mountain Dews, you know, being from that control room to where you are now, have you taken a moment to look back and say, man, I'm like, wow, like, look at all that I've done. Like, have you sort of had a chance to reflect?
Good question. The answer to that is probably no, to be honest with you, because I have this analogy. I feel as though, look, my goal from the, when you go back to the early days of fandom, right, it was your initial question. I always want to be a professional athlete, ultimately, you know, we all grew up with that ambition. And I had, you know, I had just enough ability to believe in myself to a certain, you know, believe. And you get to Hofstra, you're playing Wonder Blade ball, and you realize, all right, this is, you're not at Alabama. You know what I'm saying? You're not at Alabama. I got you. And but still, nonetheless, you know, had fantastic teammates, fantastic experiences. But I liken this, my journey, to be honest with you, I liken it to being in a boat and you're chasing this big, big whale. But on your, as you're going down and you're chasing this bale, you're catching fish. You're catching fish, but you're still chasing this big whale. But you don't take the time to look behind, look over your shoulder and realize how much fish you've caught.
Mm.
That's sort of my analogy to, and I'm entirely grateful for the experiences and the people that I've met, the people I continue to meet, and the things that I'm able to do, and the way I've grown as a person, and how I'm able to kind of, you know, the wonderful relationships, and some of, you know, I have closest friends in sports, you know, and throughout sports, but I don't do a good enough job in simply stopping and looking back, because I still always feel like I'm chasing this big whale. And I don't know when we'll ever stop, to be honest with you. And you know, there's a quote about, or there was a, something said about Abraham Lincoln that I read very long time ago. And it went something to the effect as motivated people are never satisfied, right? So you're constantly, so I'm constantly like thinking and going, and I don't even really think about whether it's accolades or things, you know. Listen, one of the things that we didn't talk about, I was part of the XFL just recently, and we were building a sports league. You know, unfortunately, mm-hmm. didn't end, but, you know, yeah. I was vice president of production with the XFL, and I was like, wow, here's an opportunity. You're building a sports league from the ground up, and you had all these cool opportunities. I worked with some of the most amazing people who are still friends of mine, but I don't take enough time to sit back and look, because I'm constantly pursuing this big whale. I don't even know if that whale even exists, to be honest, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm catching fish along the way. I'm catching some cool fish, but I'm not looking over my shoulder to see how many fish I've caught. I'm still pursuing that whale, and, you know, and maybe that's something that I need to come to reckon with. But I am extremely appreciative of the opportunities, and I cannot be here without the journey. I cannot be here without the moments from early childhood to high school, to my experiences in college and my friends in college who are some of my best friends to this day, to CBS Sports and Radio African National, Pete, my buddy Pete, who's my buddy to this day, and ESPN and all those other, and, you know, and now my family that I work so closely with, Hearst Television, and working on content in that aspect. But man, it's still chasing that whale, bro. It's still chasing that whale. And I don't even know if it's out there. I don't even know where it is, but I'm still riding, trying to catch it.
That is incredible.
Yeah. No, that is, you know, that is great. And, you know, but, you know, to a point, you're right. You know, I mean, you're never satisfied. You want to just keep going forward, you know, but sometimes just take a second, you know, look back, but don't revel in it, because then you'll get stuck.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's great. I do want to touch on XFL a little bit. You know, obviously you guys did a phenomenal job. You were vice president of production, the XFL, correct? And, you know, you guys did a, you know, great job, you know, and unfortunately it had to be cut short because of, you know, because of COVID. Now, obviously, you know, The Rock bought it all. Are you hoping for a chance to, you know, to take over, you know, and restart what you started on?
Well, you know, for me personally, right now, I've moved into a different space of a mission that I think is really valuable in terms of tackling social injustice and working on. You know, I'm fortunate to, like I said, to work with my Hearst family, Soledad O'Brien, my Matter of Fact crew, and we're tackling some of the topics in terms of social injustice, bias, racism, and all that sort of stuff that's happening in the country that needs to be talked about. Yeah. Sports is always in my heart. Me personally, in terms of the XFL, there's nothing on the horizon there. But I'm excited to see it return, because we were really off to a phenomenal start in the new rendition of the XFL. It was truly the best people, and with respect to so many people I've worked with, it was one of the best working experiences, or probably the best working experience that I ever had. Because you're like, can you imagine, guys, if you're building a sports league? Can you imagine that? And you're building a football. If you've played football, if you've played sports, you've been a fan of sports, and you get an opportunity to build an entire league from the ground up, and you have these cool uniforms, these cool a cool ball, and you have these cool names, and if someone said, hey, you can build a league and it will be broadcasted on ESPN and Fox and ABC, and you get to come up with these, like, you know, and shout out to the team, the football team, the football ops team, who would come up with these awesome, you know, the new rules and all this stuff. It felt like every single day, it felt like just a cool dream to be part of while you're doing, you know, while you're doing your job, but, you know, you're building a sports league and you're building something that fans want, which is more football. I'll never forget that experience. Although, you know, we've since moved on, and I know the Rock and that group has acquired the rights to it, and I'm sure it's going to be amazing and fantastic. And me as a fan, I look forward to seeing it. I think there was so much more left to be done that was going to happen. But I enjoyed every experience of it. I enjoyed every part of the experience. I'm proud and happy to say I still have friends that came where the relationship started in that role. But I want to see it come back. I want to see it come back. I want to see more football. There were so many more cool things. The rule changes, the kickoff, double four, all that sort of stuff was just a lot of fun.
I mean, it's like I said, it certainly was off to a great start. Have you ever met The Rock? And
No, I've never met The Rock. If I did, that would have been awesome. I did get an opportunity, you know, working with the XFL, you got an opportunity to work closely with the WWE folk. And, and it was cool when we would go over there to kind of shoot. You know, I was also the executive producer for our pregame show and so on. We go over there and you're walking through the WWE building and you're seeing pictures of, like, whether it's Hulk Hogan, Ronald, you know, whatever, all the wrestling greats WWF days. Mm-hmm. That was almost like, you know, that was another really cool fan experience. Because if you grew up as a kid watching wrestling, World Wrestling Federation at the time, and now as an adult, a working adult, you're walking into buildings and you're seeing, you know, you walk into the WWE building and there's a big, you know, statue of, I think it's the Ultimate, either the Ultimate Warrior or Randy Macho Man Savage or both of them.
Wow.
And, you know, that's just a cool thing. So, but no, I've never met The Rock. You know, I hope to one day, just because I'm a fan of The Rock as well. But I wish them incredible success with whatever direction they take the XFL, and I will be watching as a fan.
Awesome. Yeah. Rick, you can take the next one.
Yeah, two final ones for me. So you talked about you venturing something different. I'm glad you touched about this. So you're doing social justice. You're doing change because there's a lot of change in the world. And I think it's important that, you know, that you highlight that and bring that out there, because I think the world needs that. You know, can you tell us what are the things that we'll be able to see that you're going to touch on as you go into this different sort of avenue in your career?
Yeah. So thank you for the question. So I'm working with, I've been able to partner up with my family over at Hearst Television, and we're working on a Matter of Fact listening tour with Soledad O'Brien. We've already completed our first episode, which aired back in October. It was a 90-minute special where we had some incredible voices, where we tackled the first leg of the tour, what we call the tour, was the Matter of Fact listening tour, the hard truths about bias, where we addressed bias in our country. Mm-hmm. And we had some amazing voices. Shout out to my sports family that I was able to kind of bring on board, you know, my homegirl Jamel Hill, who's able to contribute to the show as a guest. We had such a phenomenal just group. Again, it was a 90-minute special that was phenomenal. It was I urge you guys to go check it out on the matteroffact.tv.com site. And so now we're on to the second leg of the tour, what we call the tour. And we're working on what will be the next episode, which also will be another 90-minute special. There's also, in addition to the digital special is we're also doing TV specials as well. So we have a lot of cool stuff that's coming. When I say cool, I mean cool is in terms of important,
yeah,
relevant, strong messages, relevant voices that are necessary during this time. Yeah. We're addressing difficult conversations that the country needs to have in order to heal. And that's truly become a mission of mine because, I've had the opportunity to be part of sports for so long. But now I have an opportunity to use, you know, my skill and apply it with a group of really talented, smart, professional journalists and industry news folk where we can go out, we can venture out forward to do some incredible things. So the first episode is already out there. It was done. We aired October 8th. It was 90 minutes and we've completed, we're back for the second leg of the tour. Meantime, the Matter of Fact team, the show The Matter of Fact is a weekly show, which is with a national audience of about over 1.4 million viewers. You can find them locally here in the New York area on NBC. Shout out
is
to
it,
that.
Is that right?
Is that it right is there? That right?
I'm sorry?
Is that, yeah, is that it right there?
Yep, okay, Matter perfect. Of Fact TV. Yes, exactly. So tune into the weekly show, Soledad O'Brien, and then also tune into our special, The Matter of Fact Listening Tour. Like I said, the first one, our first episode was incredible. It was 90 minutes. And then we'll be back for the second one very soon as we're just rolling into production.
That's great. And I think that's important. Yeah, and because, you know, the way the world is right now, I mean, we need change. I mean, you need to bring this out. I think it's an important thing that you're doing. And is there one person, not in the sports world, but in what you're doing that you feel that it's important that you sit down in a chair and interview, you know, for people to see?
Yeah, well, with the listening tour, we go after it. We pursue every guest that we think that is relevant to the subject. And there are guests that we pursue that aren't even of everyday household names, but are doing incredible work. But certainly if you wanted to kind of, as we look forward, we would love to get the new administration in, you know, if we can somehow, this is wishfully, and we haven't, and by all means, this is not, we haven't even identified truly who our guest list is. Mm-hmm. But if in a perfect world scenario, if we can get a conversation with a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris scenario. But then there's some, I mean, look, there are plenty of, listen, there's plenty of rappers who are out there who are doing incredible work. There are athletes out there who are doing incredible work. So we're not opposed to even, we're not just in terms of storytelling and not just to be storytelling, but mission, We're not turning a blind eye to other avenues of the world, which includes entertainment, sports, politics, and so forth. Okay. So if we can tap into some of the powerful voices of those who are doing work, in spite of whatever their profession, we would love for them to be part of it. But we're going after the biggest names that we can possibly get who can contribute in a powerful way.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the best of luck, you know, but obviously, yeah, with your storied career, you know, I see great things coming out of this.
Absolutely.
So, thank you. Definitely keep up all the good work and everyone out there. You know, I put it in the chat, so it's matteroffact.tv. So please go check it out. Please help support the cause. Please help share it. We would certainly appreciate it. I know we're up against the clock. You know, I know you you wanted to give us, you know, like 45 minutes. I think we're going a little over there. But
this is a fun time, man. We sit down and talk sports. I love it.
We would love to have you back on.
Yeah.
But I want, you know, two small quick questions.
Yeah.
You and Pete still work together to this day. Absolutely. And you're helping him out with Action Tennis.
Yeah.
You know, can you give us a little update? Because me and Rick want to play, me and Rick, we're gonna take on you and Pete
one day. Oh, man, listen, hey man, they play college ball.
I don't care.
No, shout out to Pete Klein. That's my longtime friend.
Yeah.
A brother of mine, I would say. You know, we're co-founders of 1E9 Sports, where we focus on what the lifestyle of not just simply we determined that, you know, sports is part of a lifestyle, which encompasses sports gear, the way you eat, the way you live, the way you train. So, you know, Pete and I, we share the same passion for athletics. We both play football. We both have trained in martial arts. We both work out. We both have had a ton of sports injuries. And we're conscious of how we eat. So 1E9, our company, is based on an overall lifestyle. Now, ATS Action Tennis, the Action Tennis series, shout out to Pete. You know, it was an idea that he had, and him and I got together over, at the time, barbecue, because, again, it was just all part of our lifestyle. We would just get together over barbecue and shoot the crap mm-hmm. about all sorts of stuff. Yeah. And we started talking about this sort of tennis, and the conversations grew where we talked about, hey, look, tennis hasn't changed since the, you know, the 1930s or what have you. Mm-hmm. What if we can take the sport of tennis and just revamp it and make it action tennis, and, you know, surround the court with a cage, and widen the margins, and have athletes who can do incredible things, and we'll roll out obstacles, and you have to, you know, jump over tires and dodge swinging ball, you know, big giant boulders and balls and what have you. And then we added what we call disruptors around the court who are deploying stuff. So imagine tennis meets, like, you know, American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
The old school American Gladiator.
Yes, yes, I remember that.
You know, so you got to be able to play tennis, but you got to be able to kind of, you got to be really nimble, and you got to be, watch your back. So mm-hmm. that's the Action Tennis series. You know, again, Pete has been the brainchild behind that. Him and I got together, and we just started throwing ideas out there. We would literally sit, whether it's a barbecue restaurant, Whole Foods, wherever, and just come up with anything that we thought was really crazy and different and unique, but really made sense. So that's where we are right now. We want to kind of, you know, grow that sport, push that sport, get it out there. Pete has done a fantastic job leading the way, especially when I've been distracted from the project, when either focused on the XFL at the time, or you know, my own company, which is Landmine Productions, or working with my Hearst family. Pete has done an excellent job just driving that. So where we are right now, look, we're still, it's there. The Action Tennis series. We're gonna continue, we're gonna soon, you know, look to form tournaments where we have real tennis players, guys. So it's not like it's just random folk who've never picked up a racket. So truthfully, if you guys have played tennis, I've never played, so you would definitely beat me.
I've never played either.
I played once. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah. But I can handle, you know, racquetball, and I'm always diving off walls and running off walls. So no. I think I could do okay.
We redesigned the entire court with a back wall, with a ramp. You could run up the ramp, backflips, all, you know, and not only that, but to speed up the game as well. So look, we really believe in this. We believe in it. We believe it's the future of sports. Really what we're doing with 1E9 and the Action Tennis series is we're looking at the future of sports. And I think also the XFL did that. That was sort of part of the mission in terms of how you evolve the game of football. So we're not doing anything that's really mission impossible. We're really trying to be forward thinkers. And as forward thinkers, we want to advance the sport of tennis. And we think there's a great opportunity, not only that, but to make the game palatable, just not only simply to the tennis community, but to people beyond the tennis community, certainly the action community. And Pete, you know, he's a professional stuntman. So to have that stunt background, we've kind of took all the things that we love in terms of stunt, action, cage fighting, whatever, and threw it into the sport of tennis to make it the future of sports.
It's amazing. You know, we are so looking forward to it. And then, you know, obviously when we get out of, you know, COVID and we can resume normal everyday life, you know, me and Rick definitely want to, you know, take on one of those games of action tennis. I mean, we're looking forward to that.
Be prepared to, like, you know, you got to be nimble.
We won't walk for 2 weeks afterwards, but we got to give it a shot, though.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. I'm kind of nervous, but we'll give it a shot.
Man, listen, we're hoping that we believe that this sport can really take off, because, and then we hope that it can certainly translate to something that everyone wants to do, because We truly believe in the future of sports. And the other thing, again, about Pete and I, you know, with our company 1E9 and with Action Tennis Series, you know, it's really about the lifestyle of sports and like living an active action-packed sort of lifestyle where it's about how your attitude, positive thinking, how you take care of yourself, how you push yourself to the limits, and how you commit yourself to living life. And that's sort of at the core of what we do as a tandem.
Amazing. So would you recommend pounding back a bunch of Mountain Dews before playing Mountain Dew? No,
that was a long time ago. We can't do that no more. Listen, I've now since had shoulder surgery, bicep surgery, kidney surgery. You know, Mountain Dew is not going to cut it right now. Right now, it's water and
there you go.
And a ton of green stuff.
All right. There you go. And we also have a friend of yours that wants a good pizza recommendation.
Oh man. Hey, listen, shout out to my boy Len Mead over at PointsBet. Was my partner over at the XFL. I am actually a pizza guy. I hate to admit it, but I can talk a lot about pizza. Yeah, I can talk a lot about pizza. So shout out to Len and PointsBet. He's doing fantastic work. That's all part of my community, man. I have a rich community of great people who are leading the way in different areas of sports, whether it be betting, you know, football, baseball, basketball, and certainly as we tackle social injustice and the issues that's happening within our country.
Yeah. Awesome. And we also want to give a quick shout out to Khaled, you know, so your friends are tuning in, you know, and it's great to have you guys. And he's, you know, bringing it back to
4-342 in Brooklyn.
Here's the crazy thing about Khaled Hafed was, again, he represents our government in the United States. Thank you for your service. And
thank you, Khaled.
Thank you, Khaled.
And he's at the forefront of, you know, of protection. But I knew that guy. We were friends. Going back to elementary school,
wow. Elementary.
And it's no surprise that he's been successful in the area where he is successful. Because he remembers things and facts about elementary school in the first grade that I don't know how he remembers. He remembers teacher things and students. So shout out to PS52 in Brooklyn, where Khaled and I first became friends, and we, you know, to this day I'm thankful that we remain in contact and we're friends to this day.
That's amazing. You know, I mean, not many people could say that. You know,
no, I can't, but you know, yeah. That's why he's a government official. I'm not.
There you go. Steve Lynn, thank you, man. Thank you for doing this, man. This is great.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you very much. And we look forward to having you on again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, the best of luck with everything you got going on with Hearst and everything. Everyone, matteroffact.tv, please go check it out and please share. All right,
I'm a big fan of Soledad O'Brien. I seen her on CNN all the time. She's awesome. So
incredible professional. Love her.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate the time, man.
Thank you.
No,
man.
We appreciate your time, you know. So have a great night.
Thank you. Take care. Best of luck. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
That was awesome, man.
He was amazing.
That was
great.
Incredible.
He was great, and you know, definitely have to get him back on again. Yeah. I don't know if Pete was watching, you know, but you know, he'll probably watch the recap.
Yeah.
But, you know, best of luck to, you know, everything that Steven has going on. And then, obviously, yeah, we're looking forward to Action Tennis for sure.
Yeah.
I might have to hit the gym just a little bit.
I'm kind of nervous about that Action Tennis thing, man. You know,
I mean,
it's like a wrestling match, right? We'll go to play tennis in a steel cage. That's like crazy. It's like a, you know.
Good night, Khaled.
Thanks for watching. Appreciate it. But yeah, that's an incredible. His story is incredible, man. I mean, all the people he's interviewed, the story he just told about the boy. And,
I mean, you know, I'm sure we didn't even get to half of the story.
No, of course, you know. So. But he's won a couple of Emmys, the Edward R. Murrow Award. I mean, that's just incredible work. He's just going to keep doing incredible work, and everybody should go check that out. That's amazing.
Absolutely. And that interview was brought to you by Playing the Field. Playing the Field is a sports fan community, you know, and honestly, Steven talked a lot about it, you know, sports, you know, bringing, you know, making a lot of connections through that sports community. You know, obviously you have him and Pete friends for 15 years, and they're still, you know, they're still going strong to this day and creating their own sports league. So, you know, you can meet friends at Play in the Field. You could recruit teammates for, you know, if you want to go and play basketball or action tennis, you know, go and find an action tennis partner to double up with at Play in the Field. And you could also find a romantic partner as well. So go check it out. Playthefielddating.com. Absolutely. All right. So I know we're up against the clock. You know, that was a long one.
But it was not. It was fun,
but a great one.
That was a great one. That was a great one. Yeah, that was awesome.
It was. So why don't we give our predictions for
here we go.
Weekend, this
divisional round weekend in the National Football League. Let's get to the games here.
Oh
well, I'm charging my phone over there. But
yeah, I mean it should. I mean it starts off. With
are the Bills playing the Browns at 1 o'clock again?
No. It's the Rams.
The NFL has heard you.
It's the Rams and the Packers, my friend.
All right. Jared Goff playing.
Jared Goff is starting. The Green Bay Packers are favored by 6.5. Jalen Ramsey on Davante Adams. You know what? A lot of people think the Rams are going to beat the Packers. I don't see that happening.
I don't either.
But I will take the Rams at the +6.5 and think it's going to be closer than we think.
You know, it's going to be cold in Green Bay.
Yes.
It's going to be frigid. I'm going to take Green Bay to cover. I just think they're the better team. I think that thumb, it's going to be cold, that thumb.
Yeah. Okay.
It's going to bother him. And we don't know how healthy Aaron Donald is. So
if Jalen Ramsey, but I think Jalen Ramsey could, you know.
Yeah, I think he could do a number of Davante Adams.
You know, he could hold down Adams enough to keep it a lower, you know, lower and closer game. But I don't know. I think 6.5 is a, you know, it's a decent amount.
I'm taking Green Bay to cover.
Okay.
-6.5 to cover. I'm going with that.
Okay. All right. Well, the next game, at least the Bills got a little bit better billing this time around. But possible snow in Buffalo? Lamar Jackson has never
been in
the snow other than having a snowball fight with his friends.
Yes.
His quote, not mine.
No, you're right.
Buffalo is, you know, home and favored by 3. It's all about stopping the run. If the Bills have any chance to win, they have to stop the run. And if it does snow, if it snows, I'm taking the Bills to win this game. And Josh Allen will be the victor, and he will have a better game than Lamar Jackson if it comes to the snow. But if it does not snow, I'm just gonna go with the Bills. I'm just gonna go with the Bills and covering 3.
You know, this is an interesting game because
it is.
Ravens have just come off beating Tennessee. There was a lot of emotion in that game. Obviously, you saw at the end they didn't shake hands, what have you. And like you said, and then what concerned me hearing Lamar Jackson talk about how it's cold, you know, never played in the snow, which is concerning. Okay. Don't ask me why. I see the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson pulling the upset.
This is coming from Rick, everybody.
This is coming from me,
doesn't want to ever give Lamar Jackson any credit.
And I'm the first to admit it when they
give credit.
I'm the first to admit it when Lamar Jackson and the Ravens get behind.
Didn't you have the Titans winning handily last
year? I did.
Week? Yeah,
I did.
That.
And I have to eat crow on that.
All right.
And I just think that in this game, I think there's a little momentum with the Ravens right now. I think Lamar Jackson finally got that first playoff win. I think he's just feeling that sort of energy. And I'm taking Lamar Jackson and the Ravens to pull the upset in Buffalo. Give me the 2.5 with the Ravens and the upset.
Oh, you got 2.5. I got 3.
I'm on the FanDuel.
I'm on the Book It App.
Book It App. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. You could take the next one.
Game number three. We have a 3 o'clock start in Kansas City. The Cleveland Browns, Baker Mayfield, Nick Chubb, Jarvis Landry, Kevin Stefanski coming back on the sidelines, going up against the immortal Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and Tyreek Hill.
It's his third year on the league.
Yeah, the immortal. Tyreek Hill, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are favored. I have them here at minus 10.
Yep.
Mike, take it away.
You.
I'll pick it first.
Yeah.
This game is not gonna be close. Kansas City is going to win.
Is Cleveland really gonna kill them?
Yeah, no. Kansas City's gonna win and win comfortably.
Yeah. No.
Period.
Kansas City's gonna win. Cleveland will cover the 10.
Wow. So you're okay. Yeah.
Cleveland will cover the 10 because you know, I mean, with Nick Chubb and because Kansas City cannot stop the run. I don't think Cleveland has enough to beat the Chiefs, but you know, they definitely can attack their weakness. Patrick Mahomes is going to stand up at the end.
Here's the thing.
10 points.
Yeah.
10 points is you wouldn't even give the Saints the 10 points last week against the Bears. Might I remind you, the Cleveland Browns are a little bit better than the Chicago Bears.
Here's the thing. The Saints had a guy who just came off a broken body, pretty much 11 broken ribs or whatever. It's not like Drew Brees was like healthy or whatever. And this is the immortal. Let me repeat that. The immortal. Patrick Mahomes.
Listen, the guy's great, but I wouldn't go with the mortal yet.
Listen, he should have won a Super Bowl when the Patriots beat him in Kansas City. They should have won that year.
Yes,
but he didn't, and that's okay. But he got a Super Bowl MVP. I think he's been league MVP. Baker Mayfield's not going to walk into his house and pull an upset. It's just not going to happen.
I'm not saying upset. I'm saying that.
And what I'm saying is that the immortal Patrick Mahomes.
All right.
They'll get a lead, and it'll be like I don't know. It's you know they might put 35 points on the board.
Okay. All right. I mean, I could see him putting 35 points on the board, but I could also see the Browns putting up 28. Anyway.
No. But we'll see. So Sunday at 3, we'll see.
I will take this next one and this last one and the marquee game, 6:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers go and visit the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, Louisiana, to take on the Saints. The Saints have won 2 games against Tom Brady this year. And I don't think Tom Brady's ever lost to a quarterback twice in 1 year.
Yeah.
Can it be a third time? The spread is Saints favored by 3. I think the Saints are the better team. However, Tom Brady has that offense clicking a lot better lately. Certainly a lot better than that 38-3 romping. I can't see Tom Brady going down to the same team 3 times in 1 year. And if he is the GOAT, as people proclaim he is, he will do everything in his power to win this game. So I'm going to take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Also because I want to see Bucks versus Packers because I don't think the Saints stand a chance in Lambeau Field and I want a better NFC Championship game.
I'm with you. I want to see Brady Rodgers in the frozen.
We're rooting for Brady.
I mean, no, I'm not rooting for Brady. I'm going to watch the game.
Yeah, I know.
Because Brady's a guy who's played in weather like that in New England. So he'd be comfortable up there.
Didn't you just say last week that he...
Listen, things change. You got to be flexible here.
Dude, what were you drinking last week? Did you drink a lot of Mountain Dew last week?
Things have changed. There are developments.
Yeah.
New information has come to light, as the Big Lebowski would say.
All right.
Here's the thing. On this... But however, I'm going the other way. I think that Saints defense is good. I think there's going to be too much Alvin Kamara. And so I'm going with the Saints -3 in this game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I mean, it's really not out of the question. You know, I think it could go either way. I really do.
No, listen, if there was 70,000 people in the stadium, I'd go Saints all the way. You know, I like Saints by touchdown. But I just think that's going to be, you know, Alvin Kamara, that Saints defense is good.
And, I just can't wrap my head around Brady losing to a quarterback for three times in one season.
Man, you know, they're just those teams out there, you know. It's like when Brady would go to Denver, he just couldn't win there. I think the same
thing. But then again, he probably didn't have to deal with something like that in his career because he played for the AFC East. Yeah. All right. Well, those are our picks, ladies and gentlemen. We want to thank
our weekend.
All of our – no, divisional weekend.
Divisional. I'm sorry.
Yeah. We want to thank all the, you know, the new viewers and new listeners for tuning in to Steveland's interview. It was, you know, big thank you to Steveland himself.
Yes.
And we hope to have him on again. And again, reminder, matteroffact.tv, everybody. I will pop it up on the screen one last time, matteroffact.tv. Yeah. So please go and check that out and support and share. But enjoy divisional round weekend, everybody. And we will see you here again on Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, you know, for another two great shows. So have a great night and have a great weekend, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next week.
Good night.
Do you want to meet other sports enthusiasts like yourself? Playing the Field can help you connect with people who love sports as much as you do. For friendship or romance. You can showcase up to 5 of your favorite teams on your profile trading card to make it easier to find fellow sports fans. Now you can talk about sports, go to the games, or play sports with others who share your interests. Find out more at playthefieldnow.com.